Hello, and welcome to another edition of Friday's Favorite Movies. If you've never been to a Friday's Favorite Movie, this is how it goes. Each one of us takes our turn picking one of our favorite movies of all time, and then we talk about it. It's pretty simple. So today, we are doing one of Maddie's favorites, and this one is something that I hadn't seen in a really long time, so we went back and revisited. But Maddie, why don't you tell us what that movie is?
Take a little trip with me to England, because we're going to a little place called Gosford Park.
Oh.
One of my favorites.
You know, for how progressive you are, Maddie, you like a lot of white shit.
I know. Well, you know,
I'm British shit.
I'm part English, and I really think that, like, it's literally in my blood.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, my mom is half English. And something about England, man, just it yanks me in the right way, and I love it.
Sure. So why don't you tell me a little bit about Gosford Park and some of the notable cast?
Oh, boy, would I love to. Here's a great synopsis that I didn't write. When Sir William McCordle is found sitting at his desk with a knife in his chest, few people grieve. He and his wife Sylvia are hosting a weekend shooting party, and there are a variety of guests, including Sylvia's sister and her husband, Lord and Lady Stockbridge, film star Ivor Novello, and a Hollywood producer, an aunt who is dependent on McCordle for her allowance, and a variety of business associates all wanting something or other from the man. Downstairs at Gosford Park, there is a beehive of activity. But if truth be told, the factory, a few among the servants will miss McCordle. Some of the women used to work for him in his factories, and he was known to take advantage of his female employees. When the police announced that the victim died of poisoning and was only stabbed after he was dead, there is yet another mystery to solve. Beneath the surface, everyone in the house has secrets, but which would be a motive for murder?
Dun, dun, dun.
Sorry, I had a little...
hiccup?
I was reading literally, like, if you could see me now, my face is turned sideways and my eyes are like looking all the way in the corner, so I lost my place on the screen.
Yeah.
Sorry, everybody.
Podcasting is a hard thing.
Yeah, it is. And so there are... The cast in this movie is kind of fucking incredible.
Yeah,
so
it's one of the more standout things of the movie.
Let's go ahead and talk about... I'm just going to list some people off here.
Yeah,
right?
Sure, go ahead.
So Maggie Smith is in this movie, Michael Gambon, Kristen Scott Thomas, Camilla Rutherford, Charles Dance, Geraldine Somerville, Tom Hollander is in this, Jeremy Northam, Bob Balaban, God, who else is in here? Ryan Philippe, Clive Owen, for God's sake, Helen Mirren, who else? Stephen Fry, who is just like one of the best people in the entire world. Derek Jacobi is in this. Richard Grant, Sophie Thompson, Adrian Scarborough. Anyone else that's really of note on here? Am I missing anybody at all? I don't think so. That's it.
Yeah, that's the one interesting thing that I saw that I was like, wow, this must have had a very big budget, because not only are we paying for top caliber talent, but we're also staging it at this like old mansion,
without a doubt,
you know, and the set pieces and everything. It just, there must have been a hefty financial obligation to get this movie done.
Well, you know, it was directed by Robert Altman, was one of his final movies. And I think Robert Altman was the sort of director who it was just like, if he says it, then it shall be.
It's just gonna get done.
Yeah, the money came along with it. But then also, I mean, there were big people behind the idea of this movie. So it was Robert Altman and Bob Balaban that had the idea in the first place, and then Julian Fellowes wrote it.
This isn't adapted from anything, right?
It's not.
It's its own thing.
It is its own thing. It seems like it is, because I think why it seems that way is because it combines so many elements of other similar films.
It feels like it could be a play.
Exactly, yeah. Right. I think as a play, it would work wonders. Julian Fellowes wrote it. If that name sounds familiar, that's because you probably watched Downton Abbey before, and Julian Fellowes also wrote Downton Abbey.
Oh,
exactly.
Okay.
And so, you know, I think like Downton Abbey wouldn't exist unless he had done Gosford Park first.
I think that's probably true.
And it's a lot of fun. You know, it's, listen, if you don't know me by now, you will never, ever, ever know me. But also, if you don't know Maddie by now after listening to Friday the 13th, you know that I skew towards these sorts of movies.
Sure.
And documentaries and yada, yada, yada. I like long stuff that is generally slower burn. And that keeps me engaged for a long time. Mm-hmm. And this is a long movie.
It is.
It ain't short.
I think we're at about 2 hours and 18 minutes.
Is that how long it was?
Yeah.
2 hours and 18 minutes of bliss.
Oh, yes.
Of English bliss. So tell me, I've seen this movie tons of times.
Yeah.
Tell me what you liked about the movie.
Yeah. Well, my history with Gosford Park is I think I saw it on the tail of it being nominated for like Academy Awards, I believe.
Yes.
So I think that when I saw it being nominated and I kind of saw the premise, I was like, ooh, murder mystery. I can get into that. So that was kind of my history. I think I saw it when it came out on, I guess it would have been DVD at the time.
Probably.
What I like about it, I think that all the characters are really well formed, apart from some of your tertiary characters that I think aren't really given a lot of time.
Right.
But just given the constraints of the movie, you just can't have everyone have a big part. I think the cinematography and the direction is beautiful. I think the costume design and all of that stuff is really good. I think the only thing for me where this kind of suffers a little bit is that I think there's too many characters and too many storylines, and I feel like he probably got this done better when it was Downton Abbey, just because he had time to fully evolve those stories
over the course of many seasons.
Right. Whereas this feels like, wait a minute, what happened with the movie? Like, what happened with this? What happened with that? There's a lot of stories in here, and it's a little hard to follow at some points, because you're assumed a lot of the back end of the information. Like, you just kind of assume that you know like what is going on, but it doesn't. To me, a lot of the characters do not get a full arc, and that's hard for me to wrap my head around.
Fair enough.
In being a movie.
Fair enough.
It's acted spectacularly. Yeah. Like, everyone does a great job. I don't think Ryan Phillippe is the strongest actor.
No, he is not.
But once he loses his accent in this, yeah, I'm kind of fine with it.
Yeah.
But at first, I was like, there's something here is not like the others.
Exactly.
Like,
you know, right, what I
mean? Like, yeah, there's this high caliber of, you know, Helen Mirren and Maggie Smith, and then Ryan Phillippe.
Yeah.
So it's a little unbalanced.
Yeah.
But I like a lot of aspects of it. The overall movie, to me, as you've known, I'm definitely not a longer movie person.
Yeah, for sure.
So it wore out its welcome a little bit just because of how long it was. But the idea is there, and I think it worked really well when he did Downton Abbey.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. I think that the part of the beauty of the film in the length of it is that there are some points that get made that are sort of just like very what's the word I'm looking for? They're sort of subdued, mm-hmm, you know, and you learn these little drops, these little nuggets as they just happen. Like, one of my favorites is when Constance, who's played by Maggie Smith, she's the Countess of Trentham, and she is, you know, she's looking in the mirror and her servant is behind her getting her clothes ready, mm-hmm, and she's sort of just like dabbing herself with like a powder puff, and she's about to go out shooting for the day, right? Or the women are going to go have lunch with them after they're done shooting. And she hates it. She hates doing it.
Yeah.
And she looks in the mirror and she says, why must one do these things? And it's this beautiful, quick moment. It doesn't last very long. But it's sort of the entire movie in one drop.
Yeah.
Why does one do these things?
Yeah, because none of them seem to even like each other.
Everyone hates each other.
Yeah.
Everyone hates what they're doing. Mm-hmm. No one enjoys it. Everyone is having a terrible time. But yet they just keep going. And that's like the movie is without a doubt like a little murder mystery kind of thing, which is cool. And I like watching that sort of motif or whatever. But what the film is really about is it's about the end of the British Empire. Mm-hmm. And it's 1932. World War I has happened. You know, it was a terrible scourge on the young people of England. So many people died. And it's just before the next war starts.
Yeah.
The empire is over. You know, England, as everyone knew it before, is just, it's no more. Everything is changing and no one knows how to catch up.
Yeah.
Or even like which way to turn. Upstairs isn't really upstairs anymore. And downstairs isn't really downstairs. No one knows really what's going on, mm-hmm, as everyone just tries to grasp onto tradition.
Yeah.
To hang on to it, to make sense of their own lives. And you see that unravel in people within Gosford Park.
Yeah, I think that just for me, I wanted to know more about some of the other characters that just didn't quite, like, the two, I think they're lords, the ones that show up late.
Yeah.
I'm just like, what, apart from the scandal with him sleeping with the maid,
yeah,
I don't understand their purpose of being in the movie.
That's a good question.
You know what I mean? Like, and it's literally those two characters. I think they give a lot more to everybody else. I especially like the story angle of the maid that kind of like speaks up, and then she immediately is fired, but then she has like this liberation moment of like, hey, we'll give you a ride to London if you want. And she has that great moment where she takes the dog that everyone's been kicking and throwing around the entire movie. So I really like some of the storylines. I think this would have been better served as maybe a multi,
I get it,
a multi-episode thing, just so we can get a little bit more out of it.
Yeah, you know, and you know, those two guys get a little lost, because what that's really about is about Isabel's future. Mm-hmm. Isabel is the daughter of Sylvia.
Because she had a crush on the one.
She had a crush on the one for sure, but we don't have enough time to really see that because they come in so late in the movie. But then also we discover that she's pregnant. So you know, she's pregnant with I can't remember his name right now, but what's his face's baby,
the blonde,
yeah, the blonde guy that's absolutely awful to his wife.
Yeah.
He's such a piece of shit. And you know, I do wish they would have had time to play out more of her like sexual awakening. Mm-hmm. And what is going to happen with her now that her father is dead and her mother is likely to sell the estate,
yeah,
and go live in London. Like, well, okay, now what happens to you,
right?
You know, maybe Gosford Park Part 2 one day will come out. Who knows? I'm going to pray for it personally. Yeah. I'll buy you tickets.
There are some moments I thought were this kind of stand out. Okay. I love the moment where the producer and his actor or whatever, they don't want to shoot guns. So they're kind of just like sitting off to the side.
Yeah,
and
totally.
The pheasant comes like right down on top of them. Yes. There's a good comedic moment there. Yeah. A lot of the dinner table scenes where everyone's having a moment to kind of like sit down and have a discussion, and you're learning more about their lives, and at the same time you're seeing kind of the servants' angle of things where they're having their dinner downstairs.
Sure.
I think those moments are really good. Now, I'm not saying that they're not good moments in this movie. For me, it's just the overall thing that it misses a little bit, but I still appreciate it. And I realize that there are a lot of fans out there, because obviously it was nominated for, Academy Awards.
Yeah, sure.
So.
Yeah. And it won quite a few awards. In terms of awards, I just pulled up that damn list and now it's gone again. It won for the Oscars, it won Best Screenplay. I know that.
Okay.
And then for the Golden Globes, it won, let's see here, it won Best Director. It was nominated for Best Motion Picture, both for the Oscars and for the Golden Globes. Best Performance for Helen Mirren, for Maggie Smith. Also nominated for Best Screenplay for Julian Fellowes for the Golden Globes.
Hmm.
So, you know, it was up for a lot. It was a big budget film. It takes a lot of money to do period films.
Yeah,
like that.
And to do it well.
And, you know, they even, like, make a point of really pointing out how period the piece actually is. Like, mm-hmm. when the servants are setting the table, you know, they're measuring it for you. They're showing precisely how it is. They're asking about, why does this fork go here?
Yeah.
And they're making the old traditions clear for us who don't follow these things anymore.
Who don't know it or remember.
Right.
It.
Yeah. Sure. And giving us a sense of, you know, like, this is how it was. And for a lot of people, it still is, mm-hmm. in some ways. And this is how they made sense of their lives.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and imagine, like, you know, do you think that you could be a servant like that?
No.
It would be pretty hard.
And anyone trying to silence me would be hard for me to do.
Yeah.
And I mean, I was a server for a long time. So there is an aspect of that too. And I did work in fine dining. So there is an aspect where we did have the setup where everything had to be perfect.
Yeah.
And, you know, we did shine all the silverware every single day. Like, so there's aspects of this movie I can definitely get behind and understand just from that angle. And you're working with high clientele that you can't really speak to, you know what I mean? You're there to serve them. You're not there to talk to them.
Did you ever have to, be really, was anybody ever rude to you?
Oh, of course.
In that setting, such that you couldn't say anything, though? You had to, like, basically act like them?
A lot of times.
Wow.
With money comes a air of I am invincible. And
privilege.
Yeah. And it's just, that's how it is.
That's so disappointing.
But I mean, at the same time, there are, you know, a ton of great people too. So it's not saying that all rich people are awful. You know, people are just people. Some other things about this movie that I appreciated, especially was Maggie Smith. I think Maggie Smith is at her Maggie Smithiest here. Man,
she's so good in this.
Yeah.
And I love her in this even more than I loved her in Downton Abbey. Because in this, there's like a pithiness and like, she's just a bitch.
Well, I just liked it that she, although she treated her servant as a servant, she also kind of had like a banter with her.
Yeah,
and kind
totally.
Of like, she was like, I know, you know, the rumors, like, you know, tell me like what's going on downstairs.
What and if
like,
I told you they yeah. cut cods for him?
Right. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Some of the things that I was just like struck by was the way that the servants had to be everywhere but nowhere at the yeah. same time, and how they had to use their own staircases and they had to use their own air. It was just fascinating because I've never been subject to that. You know what I mean? I've never seen that before. And I guess I didn't realize that, like, you need to be there all the time, but you need to be out of the.
Yeah.
We shouldn't see you. You should be seen, but we don't want to see you.
And just how looked down upon you were.
Right.
You know, there's a great scene in the film where, the asshole husband, I cannot think of his fucking name, but whatever. He like catches Isabel and he like grabs her arm and they like sort of start to kiss maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And then she sees that somebody is there and it's a servant. And the asshole husband says, oh, don't worry, he's nobody.
Yeah.
And once again, it's one of those lines that just encapsulates maybe, like, nearly the entire film
mm-hmm.
In just a very short little spurt.
And I had not seen this movie probably since it came out on DVD.
Yeah.
I remembered that there were gay aspects of this yeah. movie, but I could not remember if they were overt or if they were kind of more subdued. So I was like kind of waiting for that moment where there was like a gay moment.
Yeah.
But it never really happens. There's like little off the cuff sayings that they say to each other. Like, I think the two head butlers are both gay. And the one guy really wanted to be assigned to
for Ivor Novello.
Yeah.
to see him in his underwear.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. Like, so there's things like that, but I could not remember for the life of me.
There is also the Bob Balaban and Ryan Phillippe scene.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
yeah.
But nothing happens.
But it's implied that like
he'll do anything for the part.
Exactly, mm-hmm. and that he's been sleeping with him. You know, this isn't the first time that he's been asked to stay in bed.
Well, Ryan Phillippe is basically just like a sex animal in this movie.
And also, like, Ryan Phillippe is probably at like his peak cuteness here too. Mm-hmm. I think like this is just after 54. It's not that long after, because
yeah.
this was 2001. When was 54? Was that like 99?
Yeah, maybe, right around there.
So a couple years after. I mean, he is a little cutie. Like,
yeah.
let's just face the facts.
No, totally.
I want to do that. I want to have fun with him.
Yeah, he just needs a better dialect coach. Because that accent yeah. at the beginning is not great.
I know, but I think it's kind of the point, though, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he's not Scottish, and like he can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
But English people are really good at reading a bad English accent. Trust me, because I do it all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, I do bad English accents all the time. And so, like, how nobody else caught on
right.
that he wasn't Scottish. Was kind of funny.
It's like a revelation.
But I guess it also kind of speaks to like the English versus Scottish thing. Like, you
sure.
know, like it's interesting over there. But yeah, anyways.
Yeah. yeah, I just, his character was just so strange because he just would sleep with anything.
Yeah.
Anyone and anything that would move.
I mean, or rape anybody too, because that is part
or try.
Of this as well.
Yeah.
Or try to at least, which is a bit of a disturbing scene because
oh yeah,
I think that illuminates really how often something like that probably happened. In those houses, especially where women's voices weren't really, you know,
and they weren't allowed to say anything
or respected. And yeah, I mean, who are they going to say something to? You know what I mean?
Even if they took it to like the head maid or whatever,
right?
And what is she going to do?
And in 1932, like if you told somebody that, they would probably just blame it on you.
Yeah.
So, what a terrifying world that must have been for women, where they had no choice but to keep their jobs there,
mm-hmm.
and they probably had to keep so very much quiet and away from everybody else.
Yeah, it makes me wonder what the pay for that kind of a job would be, because you literally live in the house, so you don't have living expenses.
Yeah.
You are eating there, so you don't have those kind of expenses. So it alludes to that you probably don't make near to nothing.
Yeah.
Would be, because you're basically working for accommodations.
You know, I think Downton Abbey illuminates that a little bit better.
Oh, good.
Just because, like, you see characters... I mean, I know it's not factual, of course. I'm completely aware. But, like, you see characters on that show saving money. You okay. see them, like, you know...
Trying to get out.
Trying to do something different. Like Anna and Bates try to buy a cottage. And, mm-hmm. like, they try to, like, do, a bed and breakfast kind of thing. So, like, you see people changing more. But that's also... It's just part of the time shift as well. Like, you know, after the 30s, like, suddenly upward mobility, like, became a thing for people that weren't in the nobility.
Yeah.
So, like, you were able to save money. You were able to do things in a different way just because things were really changing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that people had to pay their house staff more because their house staff started to leave. You know, wanted to get married.
Yeah.
People wanted to go do something different. They didn't want to follow in their parents' footsteps and also be in service and have a miserable fucking life.
That's another part of the movie that they play up to, is that, yeah. like, how many of your parents were in service, and, like, yeah. a majority of them raised their hand,
right.
which is interesting.
Yeah, and sweet little Clive Owen's character, he was in an orphanage.
Yes.
And he came back to kill daddy, which I think is another great part of the film, right? Like, I mean, the fucking dude dies.
Mm-hmm.
And it is neat that everyone hates him, so no one really knows who did it.
God, that one scene pissed me off so much,
where
she tries to give him the coffee, and he's like, I didn't ask for coffee, and he just, like, kind of hits the glass off of her tray.
He plays it so well too. But Helen Mirren is a miracle in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
She plays it perfectly the entire time, and with such an English stiff upper lip, she keeps it together.
She's got that bitch face.
Oh, until the end when she breaks down with her sister.
Yeah,
and it's incredible. And it's a good story too about orphanages and about how many illegitimate children were born during that era from rich men that were assholes.
Yeah, who took advantage.
5 stars, go see it.
All right, anything else about Gosford Park that you would like to illuminate for our listeners?
Thank you for indulging me on letting me talk about more English stuff.
Yeah, sure.
Congratulations, everybody. God save the queen.
Okay, so that brings us to our podcast corner. Maddie, have you picked out a podcast that we can illuminate for our listeners?
Boy, have I ever. We are going to let our listeners know about some of our dear friends, mm-hmm. Movie Geek and Proud. Yeah. Remind me what their names are again.
Rob and Sean.
They've got a great podcast. They have many episodes out there. It's exactly what it sounds like. These are some gay dudes that talk about movies. And so you should listen to it. And in fact, you should listen to episode number, I can't remember, but it's about Charlie's Angels,
mm-hmm.
because Andrew is on it, and yes. I'm in the voiceover at the start.
Yes.
So listen to it, and we're going to play their promo for you right about now.
Hi, I'm Rob.
And I'm Sean.
And we are
Movie Geek and Proud.
A movie podcast where two gay movie geeks review current and older movies of all genres, good and bad. We also pick titles and share our opinions on films that are either not well known or guilty pleasures. But we are proud of our taste and encourage all other movie geeks to do the same.
And it's not just movie reviews on our show. We play games, trivia, movie drafts. We have guests come on, and even the occasional skit.
You can listen to our show on your favorite podcast apps, including SoundCloud, Podbean, and iTunes. You can also follow us on Twitter at MGNPPodcast. And remember, every movie has at least one fan.
You're so cheesy.
What? How's that cheesy?
And every movie does not have at least one fan.
I say it does, and you can't prove it doesn't.
You can't prove it does.
Yes, I can. That's why we're doing this show. It's like every time you want to start with me, I don't understand.
No, you
yes,
can't.
Yes, you can. Saying, I'm no, telling you, they ridiculous. Always have to do.
You always do this.
Movie Geek and Proud, a new episode every Wednesday.
Now, wasn't that fun?
It was fun. I have a really good time with them whenever they put on a movie that I kind of remember, or want to revisit. It's always fun listening to them, and they play little games, and they have good Twitter presence where they do movie drafts and questions of the week, and their Twitter presence, and you can tell that they've really built up a good audience, and that they want to indulge and they want to kind of talk with their fans. And right. I think that's really important, because there's a lot of podcasts out there that just want to talk at you, not talk with you.
Exactly.
So I think that they do a really good job of that.
So do yourselves a favor, wherever you listen to podcasts, look for Movie Geek and Proud on Twitter. They are MGNP Podcast. MGNP Podcast on Twitter. They're fantastic. Have fun with them. We hope you had fun with us on another edition of Friday's Favorite Movies.
And if you listened to our last episode, you'll know that this is our second to last episode of Friday's Favorite Movies.
It's coming to an end.
We will have one more in June, and then this year journey of kind of getting to know your two hosts' movie tastes will be over. I know that some of you will be very sad about that, but also it leads us to being able to bring out you more content from our Horror in Real Life and Horror in Media segments.
So we have some really fun changes coming, and we think you're all gonna love it.
Yeah, totally. Thank you so much, Maddie, for bringing us Gosford Park.
You're welcome.
All right, and that will be the end of this episode of Friday's Favorite Movies. Coming at you soon will be a new, all-new episode, followed by a lot more content. So stay tuned, everybody. We're glad to have you. And as always,
get slayed.